if you go to the middle of part one, and David can follow along because I'm sure he's done this, you'll see that in the New Year's Eve pass by Cassini, which came within about 80,000 miles, which is closer than we've ever been to this little place ever in the history of the space program or in the history of humankind, they took a stunning series of pictures, both narrow and wide angle. They took color mosaics. They put them together. They put them on the JPL website. And when they released them a couple days after the flyby, we saw this incredible ridge or wall, which seems to span the entire width of the dark area, roughly one half of Iapetus. And it's exactly on the equator. Various early reports said it was close to. It turns out now from people like Tillman Denk, who's one of the Cassini mission members who's published on this out of the university in Berlin, it is exactly on the equator, David. It is 12.4 or 5 miles high in some places. It appears to have a decreasing height as you get to the edges of the dark area, which I think is a clue as to its formation. And it is also as wide as it is high. It's about 12 miles wide. It appears to sit on a kind of a, not a berm, but a kind of a sub-ridge.
Now, does this go all around the moon?
Or? We don't know.
Okay, we don't know
that. In truth, we don't know because we don't have high res at enough resolution to see the bright side.
All right.
One of my predictions that I'm going to put in part four is that it will not go around the bright side. And the reason for that you will see in part four. It's endemic to the model, to the theory. And remember, science is prediction. So we will not see this wall extending around the bright side if we're right in our model. But again, you can't judge a model by one prediction. You have to have a range of observations, a range of predictions, and in part four, we're going to make a series of very specific predictions in support of this off-the-wall, pun intended, model that I have been proposing
for
the last few weeks.
Let's find out on a scientific plane, because we're going to get into your thoughts, Richard. But David, what do you think, or how do you think this wall might have been formed?
Well, it's very early days, George. We've only found about this ridge very recently, so there's all kinds of theories flying around. It seems to me, and I go back to this point I made earlier, that we're seeing several mysteries all focused in one place. Now, it's kind of hard to believe that they're not in some way connected. At least some of them are connected.
David and I would agree on that, but it's highly unlikely to have separate coincidences.
Yeah.
There's some connection between these, and the really important thing is to figure out what the real connection is.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, the impression I got when I looked at that ridge and I looked at the other mysteries is that it seemed to me that Iapetus shows all the signs of having suffered some catastrophe in the past. Now, we know that, you know, these sort of things happen. They've happened to Uranus, which spins around on its side. It seems as though the Earth was probably hit very hard in the past, and that's what formed the Moon. So the solar system is a dangerous place. We know that. We know all kinds of catastrophes have happened. And it seems to me that you can explain at least some of these mysteries by an event in which Iapetus was hit very hard by a large object in the past, and that's what knocked it out of its orbit, possibly partially melted it, and when it reconsolidated again, it didn't reconsolidate as a perfect sphere, but as a kind of an odd shape, a strange sort of ellipsoid shape. And also you can possibly explain the ridge as well in terms of what happened when the portions of the moon came back together again. If you had a compression effect, you might
from both sides, right? From both ends, almost.
Yeah, yeah. And now, you know, I'm just giving you some vague ideas here. Obviously, all of this would have to be run through a computer. You'd have to do all kinds of computer simulations. There's all kinds of possibilities for how the moon was hit, you know, by what size of object it was hit. What depends on the makeup of the moon as to what actually happened. But, you know, there are really two natural ways you could get a ridge like that forming. One would be by compression, by, you know, the kind of mountain forming process of two things pushing together and causing this wrinkle. And the other one would be where you had a giant crack and you had some kind of eruption of material between the cracks. Now,
why did you say natural? As what would be the other possibility?
Well, I'm sure Rich is going to go into that in a moment, and we can discuss that. I'm kind of giving you, I'm trying to play Mr. Orthodox here.
It's a division of labor, George.
It just makes it a little bit more interesting, doesn't it?
It does.
If I can give the mainstream, and I'm not ruling out what Richard's saying.
No, you're not. That's true.
I'm just giving you some ideas. So we've got possibly compression and then we've got possibly eruption of material. Now, one of the mysteries is why this ridge is exactly around the equator.
Isn't that cool?
It's cool, but was it formed around the equator, or was it actually formed in some other orientation? Because if you've got this sort of bulging waistline and you've got a spinning object, what's going to happen is over time, the lowest energy configuration is with that bulge in the equator. So I think possibly what happened is that the ridge formed in another orientation, and over time the spin has reoriented itself into the lowest energy configuration, which would be with the ridge perfectly. We would actually expect it to be perfectly in the equator. This could have happened over billions of years. This ridge is very, very old. We know that because it's overlain by craters, so it's probably, 4 billion plus years old. And that would give time for the moon to have settled into the configuration we see it in today.
I like this. We're leading up to something here, Richard.
Yes. Well, I agree with all of what David has said in terms of a natural model. And the important thing for people who are following this to listen to is that he's proposing a series of testable ideas that with new data, better data, higher resolution, closer passes, more sophisticated spectroscopy, looking for craters and how they might grade from the ridge toward the poles in terms of, a time sequence, we could probably figure this out. What I am struck by, even at the resolution, which is on the order of 700 meters for the best photographs now, is that parts of that ridge are exactly linear. They are parallel. They go for almost 100 miles where there is geometry, where you can actually see that there is a remarkably rectilinear geometry to this ridge, which is not what I would expect of a, natural fault or fire fountains or some kind of natural geological internal process, but in fact, more likely, something that was built, that was designed. And here's where the dichotomy comes in, pun intended, because what we're going to need to decide between these models is much better data. And I come back to what I said a few minutes ago. NASA is not planning to get much better data, unless they're talking about it inside and it hasn't leaked out yet, for almost 2 years. So if something were to happen to Cassini tomorrow, we would be left, David and I would be left with his models and my models, and never the twain shall meet because we don't have enough data to decide.